You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Hurling Show. And what a morning, what an afternoon to be here to digest the magic of the experience yesterday. Dave Herity, welcome.
Diarmaid, how are we keeping?
Current Kildare manager, but of course Kilkenny great as well. And Niall Moran coming in with the most outrageous background. Is that the actual background, or is this one of the settings that you have on Google that you can have this amazing amazing Limerick background, Limerick paddock background?
No, we got the background cleaned especially because we were hoping to throw this baby up for auction there for the Ryder Cup. So for all your viewers there, the number will be coming across the screen there. If anyone fancies 2027 renting out a house there. Might have to be cleaned inside first, though, and packed in with a glove.
You can knock 4,000 or 5,000 off the price to clean it inside themselves. Celebratory mode last night, where you were back in Limerick. Did you stay local, or was it into town, or is that all kind of ahead of you for the next couple of days?
It was just, Ash, look, it was a magnificent day, Gizzy, to be honest. I hardly had a drink. We'll probably make up for that now later on today. We have our ducks in a row for later on in the evening. But, Ash, look, even just there in Dublin afterwards, we hung around Jury's Core Park before it for a little bit, and obviously after it, and I was in good company there with David. I'm surprised he actually tried to make it. I had the good fortune of meeting his wife, Kira, for the first time, and I'm sure she's going to be beatified at some stage for having to put up with that lad for the whole night. However, she managed to drag him in, I don't know. You
might get how did she drag him out, I'd say, was the question.
It was one of those moments. You know, the next morning, you wake up and you're kind of going, we're okay, aren't we? Like, no, as in, I didn't do it. Yeah.
Are we?
Yeah.
Are we?
It's all right. She's like, no, we're okay. And I was like, lovely, that's all right. Then you know it's a good night.
Yeah.
Straight away, you can tick it off and go,
did
okay.
Did I cross that line? No, you didn't. You didn't. Sorry, I'm used to you. I suppose there's a little bit of forgiveness anyway, in that you'd be caught up in the occasion, and there's a disappointment, and you're feeling the disappointment of the loss. I don't know. Is it like that? Is it the fact that like they did everything they could?
Yeah.
Do you know if they don't do it, you come away disappointed because you're annoyed or something inside you, frustrated that they didn't do what they could have done, but it seemed like they did. So you kind of come away thinking, well, look, it like it's not as hard to take as.
No, like just the occasion itself, it was a cracking match. If you look at the last few finals there, the one last year was over after 15 minutes. The year before, you know, it didn't against Waterford, Limerick against Waterford, brilliant win for Limerick, but it never really ignited that year.
Yeah.
And then Tipperary, the sending off in 2019, that wasn't great. So you're probably looking back to 2018, the Galway Limerick one, when it was actually a cracking match. And yesterday was. It was a brilliant match, but I just never felt Kilkenny were in control. They needed to get that start. They needed to get the start that Limerick did. And once they did, they felt that they had him at arm's length. Even when Richie Hogan got the point to level it up in the 63rd minute, I know we might talk about Richie again. It was brilliant to see him coming on. But then Limerick just went straight up the field and got 5 points in a row. They're in control. They're set up. Where I was in GBA, thankfully, had invited me, and I was in their box, but we're at a perfect level just to see the movement of the Limerick forwards. Mm. They are a phenomenal team.
Are you looking at that now a little bit differently as a manager? Completely. Are you thinking, you're looking at setup, you're looking at how they're moving, what they're like, you're not following the ball in the emotion of the game as much as you used to
be? No, you know, you're right. Because, and it is kind of difficult. You know, like, you're not even nearly clapping. As soon as the ball goes over the bar, you're kind of looking at who's organising and what's going on.
Mm.
But I couldn't get my head over the fact that just say TJ Reid would have a free. Now, every manager nowadays has, you know, when they have a set play. If a scoreable free goes over the bar, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. We're going to be in a spine. We're going to push up our forwards. We're going to try and create space here. We're going to load one side. There's always something. But every single time Limerick changed it up, every single time there was a free, somebody is orchestrating it. And it just looked like, you know, Will O'Donoghue pushed up there one stage, both midfielders did. Another time then I said they're loading. Another time then they're on the spine. Like Kilkenny hadn't. They were run ragged.
Mm.
Like I think they got 15 points off puckouts, their own puckouts.
Mm.
But they're just a serious team that know their tactic inside out, and that they just never seemed that they were ever going to panic. I think it's wonderful to watch, really, when you get a team together like that, and Kinnark obviously and John Kiely together for years, and obviously the players are there together. Do you think Niall might be able to tell me more, but it's a 13 of the same team started in 2018, I think it was. Like, they are just an incredible team, and it's very hard to know where they're going to be stopped, even if you have Peter Casey and Keane Lynch coming back over the next few years or next year, like, properly.
Yeah. And what's creating that, or what that creates, like, you know, if you're 17 now in Limerick and you're looking at this level of success and whatever's going to be, like, the place is sold out for, you know, there's going to be 40,000 inside Limerick later. Like, there's 20,000 dreams of young fellas there coming, you know, in the next 3 years. That's going to all come. Like, they're going to train harder and harder than in other places, I think, because they've got this... they've got this platform, like, you know, it breeds so much success. It breeds so much success.
It does, yeah. And everyone wants to get into that setup then as well. Even though I remember, like, even in, I played under 21 in for the few years there, and then there was a bit of a gap. I wasn't on the Kilkenny setup. And
when were you 21s? What were you?
No, I wasn't playing the year you were there. I was 2002, 3 and 4.
2, 3 and 4, okay.
So we won it in 3 and 4, but then there was a gap. I wasn't on the senior setup, but then they started winning All-Irelands and you're kind of going, Jesus, you know, is this bubble going to burst now? By the time I get to the actual seniors, are they going to stop performing and stop winning? And but Jesus, no. As soon as you kind of got in, they kept it going. I was lucky enough; I got in then in 8, and then it was 9 and 11 and 12 and 14. You know, you can see that again with Limerick as well. I obviously keeping John Kiely for as long as they can is probably going to be the number one thing. He's just he just looks like a brilliant manager. There's no airs or graces about him. Every time he talks, he just. I know he's obviously a school principal as well, and he knows what he's saying, but I don't know, there's just such respect, I think, for him, for everyone. You just know he's the kind of manager who'd probably, he looks like he'd go out of his way just to do absolutely anything for you.
Yeah, in a very sincere, sincere way.
That's exactly it.
There's great sincerity in him. Niall, what's your, it can be hard to judge a character almost, like, you know, because you end up talking about somebody as if, you're putting, like, it's like almost putting a limitation on somebody, say, well, this is what I think they are like, you know. So I understand that it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, but what John Kiely and Paul Kinnerk in creating what they've created, like, how, because I think he had that under 21 as well, the 2-3 years of success that he had, a particular group came together, and it's not just good players, it's fellas who like each other, and there's a great bond and a great buzz, and so you work hard for each other. Obviously Kilkenny had it too. This Limerick team seems to be the same, but it does require a management around that. Like, there is stories that come out, or there are fights in the middle of it. It does need man management, and then Kinnerk brings the whole other level of his tactical awareness of the game. What do you see the two of them doing that's more valuable than anything else?
I suppose the first thing you'd have to say about themselves and their team is that they operate with such synergy. But again, go back to what David says, like, every time you look at John, obviously he's just very common sense, straight kind of a guy, but he's so empathetic. And I suppose, like, one of the incidents that threatened to undermine Limerick mid-season this year was the discipline issue with, obviously, Pat Ryan. And, like, Pat Ryan's a very, very good guy. He's so well respected by all of people who know him, a lot better than what I do, and by most of all by all his teammates. But he dealt with what could have been a very heated topic in such a kind of soft manner, and it was kind of not swept under the carpet, but it was dealt with the way it had to be. And what you will find there is next year Pat will be back in and chomping at the bit, and he respected what John did. But maybe going back to what you're saying is, like, there's such a synergy in how they operate. And, like, even Paul there, we saw last night in the Sunday game, Paul didn't want to be seen as being the face of it, and ultimately John is the face of it. I suppose, look, there's so many parts to the puzzle, and John just ties all that in, and it's coming then with probably a team who are a generational team. But it's too simple just to say that they're a generational team.
Yeah.
Like David spoke earlier on, like, as about a 21 year old who wasn't on the Kilkenny seniors, and now the carrot was dangling in front of him to improve and strive to make that, when our own experience here, and probably the same with yourselves in Wexford, Gizzy, most lads didn't improve a whole pile beyond the age of 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And that's not meant as a slight on anybody who had them as management, but if you didn't make it by the time you were 18 or 19, okay, you probably weren't going to make a county panel in a lot of cases, but more importantly, you didn't improve. And what we're seeing year on year with this team is that they're improving. But even going back to what you're saying earlier, like, about the puck outs, like, the one thing that was predictable about Limerick all year was that they're unpredictable. Like, various teams came at various...
Their setup is predictable. The positions are predictable, which seems like a weakness. But as David is talking about there, like, what they do is very unpredictable.
But what they do is unpredictable. But, like, I suppose where I'm coming at there, okay, and in general play, we know the setup, but we have to remember that offset plays and puckouts, that, like, they are obtaining possession. Like, you look at your half-forward line yesterday, they won 17 puckouts. Like, that is phenomenal. You look at Hegarty alone, he had 22 possessions. Himself and Tom Morrissey together, they had 32 possessions in the game. But what you have there, and I know they paid reference to it over the course of the year in terms of movement in the half-forward line, but, like, there is such an intrinsic knowledge within that group of players. Like, normally you'd see a 31 or 2-year-old on any team or a club team or whatever else, he'll be calling the puckos because he has that wealth of knowledge or that depth of experience that allows him to foresee movement patterns, foresee space that no longer exists. But what you see with that half forward line is they're armed with that kind of knowledge, but you have William Tell is inside in the goals, all right? And, like, when you have William Tell inside in the goals, he is pinging it, man. And, like, with due respect, like, Joanne, it was, again, adore Owen Murphy as a goalkeeper. It was the first time, David is a goalkeeper, he might recall other times, but it was the first time I thought he just looked jittery. The pressure came on. Like, Dermot Burns' point, it was fantastic execution of skill, but it was a poor puck out. Do you know what I mean? Even some of the sharp puckers, they weren't going to hand. But that is where, and we've ultimately come back to it. And I said it probably a few times earlier on here, and lads are laughing at me. Nicky is the most important player to that Limerick team. And that said, with the greatest respect to everybody else, including Keane, hurler of the year. But the one guy that, like, the one day that Limerick looked really poor this year was actually against Cork in the league. And that was no disrespect to Barry, who stepped in for him. But his standards are so, so high. And therein lies probably, I suppose, with the knowledge that the boys have acquired outside to create that space, his puckouts are getting out in probably about 5 seconds, which the lads are buying a second in their runs, therefore they're getting on clean possession. And to me, that's why teams are finding it so hard to break them down in set plays especially.
Yeah.
I thought, I was surprised with Colin Lines yesterday letting the ball go as quick as he was.
Yeah, there was times where, like, a wing forward had scored a point and the wing back had run over to the far side and or to be a free, and the man took the free would get the short puck out straight away. It was almost like you're doing a training match.
That's exactly what I was looking at. And that's why.
And it worked both sides. It wasn't.
Yeah, like, it wasn't. Again, Kilkenny got 113 off there. But the big thing, I was looking back on all the kind of stats there from yesterday, and it was put up there on Twitter yesterday. There was very little. You know, you're trying to look for one thing and going, geez, that's where they got.
Yeah.
But everything was pretty much bang on. Kilkenny got 113 off their own puck outs. And yet, you know, you're saying that about Owen, but it's still 113. I just think they had to kind of work for it. It was out of nearly pure genius, like, you're hitting it down on top of TJ. And he wasn't moving into perfect space. But it was just the long puck outs. Limerick won 65% of their puck outs, and Kilkenny only won 42%. That pretty much was the only difference between the two teams. Obviously, the extra few scores, but just the ease, I think, at which Nicky was able to find his men.
Just one thing, it may be a very stupid question, which I'm full of as well, is with a short puck out, when they record the stats and you say a short puck out went to the corner back, right, that's the puck out and that's a short puck out. But when he ultimately gets stood up and just turns and drives at the same length essentially as the keeper, and they lose that because the wing back catches whatever, is that counted in the puck out strategy?
It would be counted in the Twitter there. Yes, they would have just went, Kilkenny had 10 short puck outs, they won 10, so that's 100%. But anyone who's actually a proper analysis team will have it that the ball, Sean Flynn had a brilliant article there last week up on again up on Twitter about this, that Limerick are the best in the whole country at retaining. So they'll give the ball to Sean Flynn. He might knock it off there to Casey, who gives it to Declan Hannan. But it's the retention rate on the far side. That's the where he judges a short puck out. So if you get the ball to the fullback, he gives it back to Nicky Quaid, then Nicky Quaid hits it up and Gerard Hegarty wins it.
Yeah.
Then that's counted as one. That's one from one.
Yeah.
They're up at 65% of that, but most teams, Kilkenny would generally be about 43%.
Okay.
That's the stats. He did every single puck out this year and the retention rate, but it's just the fact that they, like you're saying, when they're on the field, like their ability to be able to be in a corner, be nearly able to suck up the pressure, inviting Kilkenny forwards into that area, and then a quick pass to Hannan, and Hannan sprays it off up then to Morrissey up there, or into Gillan or whatever like that, that they're able to just then find that space. It's nearly like they invite everyone in just to create that false security here that you have us, and then it's just a quick switch and it's up to the far end of the field.
Yeah.
But like even Jesus, again, Nicky Quaid looking back in the highlights there this morning, coming out with the ball, having the vision, Garon Hegarty just coming out to midfield. And just turn around then and not a bother just popping over the bar there from about 90 yards.
Jeez, I don't know. Effortlessness of his striking is phenomenal.
Has there ever been a player like T.J. Reid? Definitely. But just the physique. the physicality of him. Mm.
You know what I mean? And the crispness, the ease of his strike, everything about him. He was unmarkable yesterday.
I was having an argument with Jerry Keegan about this after the match yesterday. He was like, he looks like he's going in third gear every single time he has the ball. Like, again, on the puck, it's where we're at. He just makes one step to the left and then runs to the right and then just has these long strides and he's out picking up the ball, but it doesn't look like he's sprinting. Mm. But that's it. It's just the effort of everything, the ease of everything that he's doing. I don't know if I've ever seen a hurler that like him, to be honest with you.
That is in that sweet spot between height, size, skill, speed. He's like fairly ideal.
To throw David Blanchfield out of the way with about 5 minutes to go and knock it over from about 110 yards.
Niall, we had to bring you back in there out of the base and sun. They'll paste the arms on you there. You needed a bit of relief. So it's good to have you back inside safe and well. We were talking about Gerard Hegarty that notion of that little bit of his response to the criticism in a way and how that's honed his play. And in some respects, I think he's so good that he actually needs something like that anyway to inspire him a bit, because it's like the game almost seems too easy to him at this point. But he does play with a little bit of, I don't deserve this and I'm going to show you. And I felt that last point typified that.
Yeah, I suppose like people say about Giroud, like he's a guy who just lives in the road here, would know his father Ger very well, but actually probably wouldn't really know Giroud at all. But he's obviously a wonderful guy, but he kind of plays because he with this kind of FU attitude. Like, and I said, like in 15 he would have been wing back in that 21 team that would have won the All-Ireland, and I don't think anyone at that point would have kind of said that he was a guy who was going to want to be the star that he is. I don't think he was on his minor team at his goal, but to me he strikes me kind of a guy like to say that, okay, well, you're not going to pick me for a minor team, I'm still going to go on and get better. I play very well for 3 matches, I play poorly for 1, you're criticising me, but I'm going to shove it up to you. I get penalised by refs unfairly a lot of the time, but I'm going to shove it up to them there the whole time. And I suppose the one thing is, he just physically, he is untouchable. I said, like, he was like a guy at the summer camps that was supposed to go up to the under 12 group, and he actually ended up going down to the under 10 group. So now he's bigger by 2 years than everyone else, and they can't actually touch him. And you know, there was times there yesterday when you say, can you just go in and play with the other team's ball, like, you know, because look, but again, in the same breath, all right, I think Kenny will have regrets on it. And again, I'm not trying to be nitpicking here, but I suppose a couple of years when Shamie Cannon did probably Joey Holden over for 9 points, time of the All-Ireland, 8 or 9 points, like, the criticism that was labelled that time was the change was never made. And yes, yesterday the change was made, but the horse kind of bolted at that stage. And do you know what I mean? David Blanchfield did well for a few minutes. He was on him. Obviously, Groves had picked up a point. So, like,
is there anybody you would have seen and said, geez, I wouldn't like to see him on Gerard now because it'll quieten him?
I think it was, like, to be fair to Fintan Burke, the previous match, I know Gerard was off form, but you kind of be disingenuous to Fintan Burke. You have to sacrifice your game playing against Limerick. All right. And it was the one thing in the first, early on, like when Limerick seemed to be fairly dominant, I thought Richie Reid in particular was made redundant. I thought tactically, like, for sometimes, I'm obviously Kilkenny had their work done, but I thought tactically a little bit of what they did was a little bit naive. John, like, if you look at
the terms of the long ball, or
I don't know, just probably early on, like, honestly, it was a superb game. Okay, for the last 20 minutes was a phenomenal contest. Phenomenal contest. Now, the first 50, if you argue as a neutral, yes, the level of scores was excellent, but the level of ferocity and contest, it couldn't be comparable to go back to 0-9, 0-10. It was only in coming down the home straight that real ferocity came. And a part of me thought at the time that I thought Richie Reid was made redundant, and I thought it was only when Kilkenny played this game of poker, when they pushed up completely on Limerick, that I thought they actually started to get gains. And I think with Limerick, you just have to, there's either two ways you can go here. You can go out with the impression that you're going to get bet by 10 or 12 points, or you can push up on them, take your chances, okay? Have man on man. And I thought in Galway's case in the first 20 minutes, I thought first 15 minutes, I thought Colin Mannion didn't exactly know where he was supposed to be. And I thought Richie Reid fell into the same trap for a little bit yesterday. And I do think that in Garrod's case, come back to the original question, Galway pushed up, manned up, and whatever was going to happen in behind you, let it happen. Like, because there was times there yesterday when Limerick were 2-on-2 with 60 yards of space, And normally, as a coach, you'd say close down the space. But with this, against this Limerick team, I think you've actually to do the opposite. You kind of have to break the conventional rules of defending in some shape or form and just go for it, push up, and let you be beaten by 15 points. Because without taking that chance, you're not going to beat them. And if anybody probably wants to know why the Clare get such gains, as well as matching them physically and all the rest, I think that's why they came the closest to beating Limerick this year.
Yeah. Pushing up on the half back line and their delivery on the midfield and their delivery, like it was not letting it get in with that little bit of pace taken off, it bouncing 10 yards in front of the forward, that ideal ball. It seemed like, yeah, if you could push up and be brave enough to do that. And I thought that's what, I thought that was the only way Kilkenny would go about it in a way. Like,
yeah, I think they came in with a game plan and they stuck with it. From hell or high water, really. The Richie Reid, you're dead right. Niall stood back in the D and he tried to protect the area. But you're like, unlike the semi-final there where he was on 24 possessions yesterday, Christ, he was redundant. I know he got a lovely beauty of a score then. But there wasn't, they completely bypassed him. And again, like we said earlier on, Nicky Quaid is coming out and just passing the ball to Gerard Hegarty. No one around him for 30 yards. It is one of those things, and it normally was in Kilkenny, you follow him out to the 65 and then leave him off after that. That's gone when you have Gerard Hegarty, who can just turn around and hit it over from 100 yards with someone on him. You had to push up at him. That's what they did in 2019. They pushed out. They kind of left the full back lane, left Hugh Lawler in there in the full back lane, left him on one-on-one and he was well able to mark Galana. Actually, he did very well in him yesterday, even though 3 points off it. Especially as well, then you have Owen Murphy behind, who is a natural outfielder, who plays as number six, who can sweep in there. I think you nearly have to trust him a little bit more. And especially when the Limerick lads don't go for goals. It's not like Flanagan's going to get a ball, turn you, burn you. He's always going to go for the point. So again, I think you could have, I think when Niall says they should have pushed up. Their half forward and got 113 from play. And apart from that, I know Hegarty got 1-5, but Jesus, what? And about another 7 assists, I'd say.
Yeah.
Be getting fouled. He was part of every single thing that was going on up there. They should have just pushed up on him, and that was it. It was, I'd say if Brian was looking at it now, he probably would have said David Blanchfield should have been on a lot earlier. Even catching the ball over his head for the winning score was a smashing one.
Yeah.
But I'd say they'll regret that, big time, because it's not too often you have a team like that, like an absolutely historic team that are as good as they are, and you have them by the throat. You have a chance, you've 10 minutes to go, push up and try and just go on with it. But then again, you could also argue and kind of go, they did what they did. Maybe if David Blanchfield had hit in that low ball there, instead of going for his point the last, and they could have worked a goal or something, there wasn't that much in it.
Yeah, there was something looking at it definitely where I think everybody felt that Limerick were going to win it. Who was at the game as well. Even when 52, 53 minutes there was all of a sudden everyone sensed that there was a battle opening up. And actually, as soon as I was at the game with a friend of mine, Mark, who was his first All-Ireland hurling final, and I was like, this is it now. There's going to be 20 minutes now where these two are just going to go at it sluggers. And I thought it was really coming. And then two or three plays just kind of broke down and it dissipated again. And there was something about, there was two or three times, who was it? Just looking through it now, maybe Mike Carey, Paddy Deegan, maybe Keane Kenny, I'm not sure. But it was Mikey Carey, it was one of the backs anyway. The ball was coming up the wing under the Hogan stand and he leapt forward. He overcommitted to the tackle. And I thought, well, that's what they have to do. They have to go for broke. So you have to overcommit, or you have to at least run the line of overcommitting. But maybe they would have been better overcommitting in pushing up. So within the system of holding back a little bit and then overcommitting, it's not really overcommitting. Whereas kind of going for broke is a more, you're walking that line in a more in a more genuine way, which is what Cody would always talk about. Like, it's just like stand to the line with them and go for it. Because in the way they played with Richie Reid, as you said, kind of not really anywhere, it never looked like they were going to win. So I don't know, there was something in that for me where I just didn't think...
it just didn't seem comfortable though, Gizzy,
And the thing...
On the ball,
I thought some of Kilkenny's backs just didn't look comfortable. All right. I know this argument has been over and back about the style of play, etc., etc., but I thought Richie Reid, like, the one thing as a centre back is you have to be certain about is your positioning and where you're going to take that alignment. And I just don't think he was comfortable in that capacity. And then it kind of didn't allow him to get into his first probably real All-Ireland final as a player. I thought Mikey Butler was very, very uncomfortable in the sense of, do you know what I mean? I just thought he wasn't as assured. Obviously, I know he received some of the puckers, but even in general play, it wasn't probably till Peter maybe came in him that he kind of seemed a little bit more comfortable, maybe near the end. And I think maybe in some respects, Kilkenny may have shown Limerick a little bit too much respect. Okay, in the sense that, do you know what I mean? In terms of styles and positions and everything else, I know that's been the argument about Kilkenny. Sure, they don't do coaching or whatever else, they just go out and hurl the game. That ignorant argument that's sometimes labelled. But I think yesterday, even with Clare again being a template, they just went for them. In fairness to Kilkenny, they matched them in terms of conversion rate. I think they had 72% conversion rate. They matched them for a lot of it in terms of clean puck outs. They matched them as much as they could in terms of clean puck outs won. So, there was huge, and in terms of natural ability and everything else, Kilkenny weren't found wanting yesterday. They weren't found wanting in terms of physicality. But I just, maybe where they were found wanting a little bit was, they just, at times, Limerick got their scores a little bit easier than what they should have. And that came from, it's as simple in my book as not being close enough to your players or not being aggressive enough. And as a forward looking there yesterday, I know Kilkenny, it was a tough physical game, but I don't think any Limerick forwards really got hassled from playing against Kilkenny. I thought as a forward, the last thing you want to do is be mauled continuously and whereby you have to strike out in frustration or do something to get rid of your man. I don't think Kilkenny came with that yesterday. And whereas Clare did, that's why that game teetered on the brink of all out war at times, because Clare came with that irritable sense of defending whereby, they're just going to frustrate you. And that I do think Kilkenny will have a huge frustration after yesterday, but I also think it might be the breeding ground to show them for next year, in the sense that in terms of belief and to know that, hold up a second, we are very so close to beating them,
The great photo there between Tony Kelly and Sean Finn from the Munster final. Sean, the two of them basically hands up, they both have each other by the throats, they're kind of looking in and going, come on. Tony Kelly brought it there to Limerick that day and got the whole crowd going. And there was a moment there yesterday where Owen Cody had come back and he hit Kyle Hayes, and Kyle Hayes hit him back. Gerard Hegarty came over and hit him as well. It was kind of like, oh, okay, we're not going to get into this then. But no one else kind of ran in. It needed a fight to get Kilkenny going. It needed something. Even Billy Ryan was doing his best, and when he got the goal, he was the fist pumping up trying to get the crowd going. Come on. But it needed a row to just really ignite Kilkenny or get something going. But you're right. The 50 minutes of the game, you're kind of going, okay, there's a point. Yeah. Down the field, there's another point. After 20 minutes, there was 20 scores.
Yeah. I think, Davey, in terms of, I think the first 50 to me was very like Cork and Clare in 2013. Great ball, Graham. Phenomenal scoring. And people, it was probably like one of those kind of Masters golf competitions where the course plays really easy and you see all these exquisite shots. Whereas the part that I loved was the last 20, because that was 0-9-10, and that was like the British Open where you've trying to shoot two over to win it. It's just the kind of trying to stay alive. And but the one thing I felt that about Kilkenny, that sense of aggression, all right? And it's like oftentimes you'd have kids and you try to teach kids about marking, all right? And then it says, get tight to your man. And they stand the yard off him and they say, that's tight. And now the thing is, get fucking tight to your man. And you show them what getting fucking tight, how it's so much different to getting tight, in the sense that you're holding on to his shorts, you're grabbing his arm, you're all over him. And I just think, in terms of going back to the half forward line, I thought Limerick's half forward line, they were just allowed a little bit of leeway that allowed them that freedom to do what they ended up doing. And I said, for me, I thought Kilkenny might bring a little bit more of it. And that, to me, was the only disappointment of what was a superb performance from Kilkenny. Let it not be forgotten that is their best performance in 3 years too.
But again, that after the Sunday game, remember they had it after they showed Gerard Hegarty, and they were kind of going, he's got sent off again. And they were kind of saying, well, why is he getting sent off? And they had a video of him from behind the goals. It was the Clare halfback, I forget who it was at the time, basically just got him in a headlock and dragged him to the ground on puckouts. In other words, you're not getting the ball. So it's exactly what you're talking about. But they were just allowed run left and run right. Nobody laid a finger on him at all yesterday. It was just a nice and casual, it's over the bar again. I'd say, I haven't looked back in a game, but I'd say if they're nearly showing the highlights of a Kilkenny score or a Kilkenny wide, straight away I'd say the ball is ticked over the bar and O'Murphy's taking a puck out instead of Nicky Wade by the time the actual restart.
Yeah.
By the time the camera comes back on, it was just too easy, which would be, you know, if you think back to Tommy Welch and JJ Delaney and Jesus, you know, remember Tommy and Pendergast there in the first minute of the 2008 finals. You had them absolutely, the two of them, even though Tommy's like a little terrier in the size of Pendergast, the two of them going hammer and tongs at each other, kind of going, if you want to take me on, it'll take me on. And it got everyone going that day, and Kilkenny came out and sure, obviously blitzed Waterford.
Yeah.
It was lacking that bit of bite or intensity there yesterday. Yeah.
One, I suppose there's a couple of possibilities there. One is the character. I'm wondering who the character is. I would have thought maybe somebody like Padraig Walsh might be that character who would lead that side of the battle. Like, I don't expect TJ to lead that side of the battle in some respects, but having said that, he might. But even though we break down systematically and tactically what happens in games and the genius of Paul Kinnurk or the supposed limitations of Brian Cody or whatever way people look at the tactics game, one of the things I thought or I feel, and it's the way I process games, I suppose, was the semi-final Kilkenny went from nowhere to all of a sudden showing this capability, and it was a little bit like the cat's out of the bag. Like, it was like, this is actually Kilkenny are right in it for this. From a Kilkenny perspective, I was thinking, Jesus, I wish that the cat was still in the bag from the semi-final, and that they were still going to show the hurling world that they weren't going to be put down. Because, and this is where the tactics for me are just useless, is the fight that Niall is talking about, or the lack of the fight, that extra 5%. There was loads of fight in Kilkenny, there's no question about that. There was loads of fight in Kilkenny, but that extra 5% of fight that says, I'm going to cross the line first and fight you, not I'm going to wait for you to fight me.
Yeah.
I'm going after you. I'm not the hunted. I'm going to hunt you. That wasn't there. And
it's a very young and inexperienced team as well. And
it is too.
You know, you can talk about, I know, you can go down to the whole team. Like, if you take out Owen Murphy, who's played in finals, and TG Reid, like, the rest of them is very, very inexperienced. Who was one in All-Ireland on the field of play? Besides TJ and Owen, obviously Conor Fogarty comes on there for a minute or two, and Richie Hogan comes on, and Wally Welsh does, but very few of that team have. Like, they don't have the experience of, and the bit of arrogance there, kind of, to actually bring it to the opposition and kind of go, I'm dictating things today. You might be the champions, but I'm taking over. And it's not there, but they'll come back from that strong. I think Kilkenny's in a very good place. I don't see too many of the starting 15. TJ won't retire. Like, he's only two off Brick Welch's record of appearances. He's only, I looked up there this morning, he's 21 off Pat Horgan. So he'll definitely stay on for next year. He'll have a baby coming as well. He'll want the photo in Croke Park. That's what everyone
wants. I don't
know,
is that what's driving fellas at that point? Like, do they just want to pay more bob?
Too much babysitting, I'd say. Too many fellas with two kids, you can get up to Dublin for Saturday, Sunday, and you're probably still up there. You're not home yet.
It's just Sunday. Yeah, no.
Yeah. We might stay up tonight as well, sure. Who knows? I don't know, Niall, from your end of things, looking forward, like, John Kiley's obviously going nowhere. Paul Kinnurk, I mean, he's getting into the territory of, I don't know, English soccer clubs, or he seems to be, I don't know, is it tactically, is it just hurling tactics and his knowledge of hurling, or is he just in, does he have a great insight into just how to get the best out of people? And those two, you know, Jim McGuinness seemed to have that, how to get the best out of people, and that's why he went, he could cross over to different sports. I don't know, is Paul's insight much more towards the tactics of the game and then getting lads to play the part in that?
Yeah, I suppose, look, again, he was referred to by a couple of commentators as a professor. Paul was a year behind me in school. Again, a fella I just wouldn't know that well. Probably a very deep guy in his own way. Wouldn't go into talking about hurling or tactics, I'm sure. But yet, to those who are close to him and his friends and the boys, would tell you, probably one of the best company you could have on a night out. Great company on that. So he just, again, he is number one in terms of his people skills. He's able to mix it and match it both ways. He's close enough in age for a lot of the players to be well in tune with their lives and whatever else. But look, as in terms of coaching, the one problem that I see for Paul Kinnurk in terms of coaching is, God help the guy who comes in behind him. Because, like, from the Clare lads, again, he's like an old ex-girlfriend that they're still pining for. Like, do you know what I mean? No matter who comes in and no matter how good they are, they still talk about Kinnurk. And obviously with Limerick, like, and he's just broken the game down in terms of, like, earlier on, you were talking about the kind of performance indicators, the tackle counts and all that. obviously that's a huge part of the game, backed up by obviously Shawnee and Anil primarily in the backroom team, that they have these KPIs that they're looking to hit. And do you know what I mean? The detail of those KPIs, like you're talking about sharp puckouts, it goes into a lot more detail than the normal probably statistician. His ability, their ability to swarm tackle, their ability to execute. Like, do you know what I mean? There's, I know they probably, there was 9 frees yesterday, but in general, Limerick didn't give away a lot of silly frees, a lot of what they had to give away. Their use of possession, their skill levels. Like, you look at Dermot Burns' free-taking, how over the course of, like, in 19, probably a couple of frees went to miss on Dermot that might have got you over the line. Yesterday, they didn't. Like, do you know what I mean? Against Galway, they didn't. That all comes down to the depth of Paul. Like, so, to shorten your question, are they going to move on? I don't see why they would. And by God, there's definitely no one in Limerick shouting for their heads anyway at the moment. But, look, it's probably another thing here. Like, I suppose as a Limerick person, Limerick in the 30s were a predominant hurling county, and up to that point would have been one of the predominant hurling counties, all right? And something badly went amiss between 1940 and today. And I say that with great respect.
When did Mackey retire? Was he not the
40s? Well, look, probably it's well documented in a book here in Limerick about the heartbreaking years, or Limerick, the unlimited heartbreak. It's well documented that there was a lot of internal strife. And I know Tom Ryan, who would have been obviously the manager during the 90s, massive character in Limerick, would have won All-Irelands. He kind of alluded to it maybe during the week about probably internal strife at times, and that his opinion was that there was people within the county that would have been happy enough to go against the grain, basically based on personal issues. So, like, the bigger picture probably for Limerick isn't about Paul Kinnerk or John Kiely. That ship will sail as it will sail for the next 4 or 5 years and have the captains at the helm. But I suppose what then the legacy here in Limerick is that what can grow out of this? Can we now start being considered one of the top four? All right. And that's a very hard road because, like, it's documented. John Kiely, obviously a player at Limerick, huge respect in it, but it was not 9. It was when we hit the bottom of the barrel that he put up the, do you know what I mean? He reached out the hand to give that hope. And sometimes it's a lot easier to actually give that support and give that that energy when you're actually down. Mm. And I know that sounds contrived, but
no,
I suppose
makes
it brings
sense.
Out a different sort of emotion in you, that emotion of frustration and being downtrodden. Again, we alluded to it with your old, but that brings out more power, more energy, more vibrancy. Mm. Whereas sometimes when you're actually successful, it's a hell of a lot easier for all the parties and Limerick stakeholders outside of the internal group. It's a lot easier for a lot of those stakeholders to say, well, our job is done now. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And
so the question then in terms of legacy for Limerick is, so Kinnerk is settled, John Kiley's settled, the players are all settled, everything is good in the camp. When everything has gone well, very, very easy to deal with county boards. You know, Kilkenny always seem to get that right because they're always doing the right thing. So there's no reason to be really at war. Don't have football to deal with, and maybe that's going to be a problem in the future too. Who knows? But the question for Limerick is if we're going to expand the conversation, like, out of Cork, Tipperary, Kilkenny as being the top three, and now we'll be referring to the top four, is if in 15 years' time, if your county board, if your whole setup is being reimagined or is reimagined from here in a way that's functional, that works, that's not biting itself and eating itself from within, then you'll have that. That's the possibility for long-term top four kind of a conversation. Whereas the danger is, from what you're saying, is we still could eat ourselves from the inside at.
I don't say it's inherent danger, Gizzy, right? And don't get me wrong here, okay? As in, like, we contrive now as somebody who's trying to preempt the downfall of Limerick, but you look at Cork, how hard they're
having to work. No, it doesn't sound like that. It doesn't sound like that anyway.
No, geez, we're not. And, like, things are moving in such a unified manner. We're very fortunate that we're in a perfect state of equilibrium at the moment. There's no point in calling it otherwise. But I suppose the key to growth is that when you're on top, like, and I know Cody referenced it, you're never at the peak of your powers. There's no point, he referenced it during the week, like he said, that no player never has a stage where they're comfortable. Do you know what I mean? Like, where that was when you're at the peak of your powers, because it's a journey, not a destination, in terms of where you want to go. And I think for Limerick, I suppose, that's now where we have to channel this huge energy, this huge sense of goodwill, this huge infestation of young lads who want to play with Limerick. How do we channel it to genuinely then consider yourself over a period of 20, 30 years that then you are one of the big hurling counties? as opposed to this being another era like the 30s for Limerick, where Limerick contested four All-Irelands. Do you know what I mean? Into 1940, contested four All-Irelands. So going back to what I'm saying to you, like Kinnerk and John Cowley, they will look after this. They will sail this ship through. But I suppose the big question that we need to do for Limerick is, and it's maybe today is not the best day for answering it, but it's how we can get to a stage whereby we keep on churning out these players. And that's an issue of hunger.
Well, I think it's a great day. I think it's a great day to ask that question. Like, I mean, look at Offaly in the late 90s and the success they had. And it definitely seemed to be, and that's how it fell out for 10 or 12 years. Like, there seemed to be awful problems that they felt themselves they didn't make the most of the successes that they were having at the time. They didn't put in the structures and the underage structures and build the academies and do all those things. Mm-hmm. And then they had 10 years of what seemed to be just war from within and the team was slipping back all the time. So you're talking about that, but reimagining it forward. So I think it's a good...
Like, I'm in a very different position commenting more so than David or any other guests who are decorated with honours of sorts. I actually probably yesterday found yesterday emotional, all right, and this isn't trying to come into it, okay? I found it emotional in the sense that, again, I'd be very quiet at games, but you're looking around at the end and you see the joy, you see the celebration, you see what you wouldn't give to be 12, 14, 16, what I wouldn't give to be my 8-year-old self or 9-year-old self going into it with my eyes wide open with all the ambitions in the world trying to replicate doing what lads are doing. And I suppose, and I'm not alone, and I suppose part of it became emotional. Obviously, you're so thrilled that this is now the era that we're living in, but there's so many regrets. There's so much time that we spent just falling over ourselves and going from managers to managers. And do you know what I mean? Like, people, we got amount of kind of broken relationships between players and players or players and county board officials with county board officials, because there was just such a sense that you wanted something so much and we're trying to get it and we ended up tripping ourselves up so much along the way. And John, you know, I suppose it's, you don't get a chance as a player, and John, you know, you're trying to finish up, the window is so narrow and that you know what I mean, like, you get that small window of opportunity whereby you can achieve your life's ambitions, and once it's gone, it's gone. And a part of me was looking in there yesterday, you're just so envious. I'm not even so much of the boys who are achieving what they've had, because they achieved it without having the level of role models maybe that they should have had in the sense of the Kilkenny childhood. But I was so envious of the young lads that they went home last night or today and they're trying to be Garrod Hegarty popping in top corner or Declan Hannan being exquisite. And I suppose, look, and that's where I'm coming back to. That's why the part of me is always looking at the future. Don't let it be a case of this was a wasted opportunity. And that's why, so that's where, to me, that's where my energy would come from this morning, is in, okay, how can we get better? How can our clubs get better? How can we have 4 or 5 more schools in the area competing in Hearty Cups, winning Hearty Cups, churning out these kids? Because that's why we will always be envious of Kilkenny. That culture, that unrelenting wheel that keeps on churning out hurler after hurler, club after club. And that's, I suppose, in everything that went on yesterday, you're still left in awe of Kilkenny and chasing, doing what they have done over the years.
I still think, though, there's a lot of learnings in what Kilkenny did, that Limerick have looked at that and they've rectified. Like, Kilkenny were winning all Ireland's, but I personally think Kilkenny took their eye off the ball completely at underage level at that time. It was just a case of, right, we'll try and get the seniors right, and we'll keep doing everything right up there, but just that minor and 21 level, keep just doing what you're doing. Like, you know, under 14, 16, just we'll get together.
They're
we'll
keen. They see the culture above. They'll keep doing it.
They'll keep doing. They'll be grand. But they took their eye off at strength and condition. I think Limerick boys are a mile ahead. Like, even if Dublin had brought in Brian Cullen there, and right, he oversaw absolutely everything. Like, in Kildare, Paul Dively is looking at all underage teams, right from 14 right up then to under 20 level there as well. But it's not there in a lot of counties, and I think that's where we fell down. We just, again, just the strength and conditioning side of things. I know we got a gym program there in December 1 year and we got the next one in July. That was it. Like, that was just the way it was. And that was 2013. But small little things, like, you need to be on top of absolutely everything. They're starting to get a good structure in. They've good men in at minor. This year they brought, you know, it wasn't the best year, but simple things as well. Like, they only bought 2 pitches. That's their centre of excellence, Kilkenny. And one of them is floodlit. So if Kilkenny, if the seniors are on there Tuesday, Friday, just say Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, that means the under 20s, minors, the minors only have 1 session a week then they're in the gym and they're maybe on they're on the pitch then on a Sunday morning, but they've only one session during the week. Like, somebody took their eye off the ball and kind of went, they were given the pitches by the council for a Euro.
Yeah.
This new setup, but like, geez, instead of getting two pitches, two big floodlit pitches, or three pitches, and make sure that we just turn this into an absolute monster of a
place.
Well,
the other side of that is that there's a lot of teams who bought their centres of excellence and put four pitches in and saddled the county with like savage debt because they did it in maybe between 2001 and 2010, like, you know, and all of their resources now are having to go after that, whereas Kilkenny don't have that. So like, yeah, there's
don't, but you're taking, just say, I don't think you're giving the teams, you know, it's a bit like, you'd be all right.
Yeah.
There's a small bit of that still there. And I think that then that feeds in, like, that's why we haven't had the success. Like, no matter what we say now, Brian did a brilliant job in guiding Kilkenny out of a famine, but they're heading back into one now again. Like, it's still 8 years now. Only the under 20 success this year.
Yeah.
It was a great win, but it was the first time since 10, and then the minors still haven't won since 14. Like, so, you know,
are they get rid of Cody Brigade going to be out in Kilkenny, do you think?
No.
Or do you think he answered his critics already, or no, does he need to answer his critics? I don't know.
He doesn't know.
I just don't know. Is there any point?
I don't think he cares, or he'd listen to it. But I think Brian, see, it's gone full circle now with everything. Like, because obviously they wanted, a lot of people thought maybe change should come in and Shefflin should come in, but Shefflin's now up in Galway. So if he does go now, well, Shefflin's in Galway, he's going to be there for at least another 2 years. So then they have to find another manager to come in. So that whole kind of just the brilliant sequence of Brian leaves and Henry comes in is now broken. So they now nearly want him to stay on for another 2 years to wait.
Might have worked in Tipperary that way, but.
Yeah, it didn't. But look, the way Liam Cahill is now back up there again, I think it'll work well. But I Brian is the kind of person,
I suppose, the job is the job, like, here, if the management job comes up, how much of a draw is it, you know?
You talking to me?
Yeah, like, for Henry, like, timing, he's with Galway, but how much, well, Liam Cahill, he was with Waterford, there's a project at Waterford.
Sorry,
but
I know
said,
what you mean, yeah.
All of a sudden he was gone, and it's like, well,
I think Henry's quite loyal, I'd say. It's a huge work put in, like, even the sacrifice of leaving your house at 5 o'clock in the morning and coming back home at 11 o'clock at night. To give that up after a year, I think it's kind of unfinished business. I'd say he'd love another year up there just to try and see for himself.
Yeah.
But it's going to be for the benefit of Kilkenny that he has gone up there. Like, to go from club to Kilkenny would have been a massive eye-opener. And he probably would have went through a couple of barren years. But I actually think when he eventually comes in, the experience that he's going to have from Galway to come back into Kilkenny is going to be immense. Kilkenny are just going to benefit, like, hugely from his experience up there, because it is completely different from, I know he's had great success to All-Irelands at Ballyhale, but to go from Ballyhale then straight to an inter-county job is not easy.
But lads, there within that conversation, I know there's a dangerous, I might have gone off track in what I was saying. So, like, as in, hold up, I'd say this, it's not that I'd be undermining Kilkenny, the process, or, well, I suppose, well, like, again, the way I look at it is, Kilkenny are always competitive. Like, irrespective of what people think of whatever managers for Kilkenny at 20th senior, there is no, they have always been competitive. I suppose the problem maybe that you probably have, David, is you're critiquing them based on the greatest team of all time, which probably is an unfair it's an unfair parallel to draw to any team. I probably would critique them slightly different. I might critique that Kilkenny team that played yesterday off the team of the late 90s, the team that contested the All-Irelands in 98 and not. I think when you put them up against them, it shines probably a different light on them. But I suppose, again, it's just, there, a challenge comes, it presents a unique set of challenges when you're successful in any walk of life, and trying to create that hunger and trying to keep guys going. And I suppose that's, I said, for Limerick today or whatever it is, that probably presents a challenge in it. Just one other thing there, lads. I felt it was a very different All-Ireland final weekend.
Yeah.
I felt really,
No minor.
Maybe it's because I didn't travel up and you weren't following around Cassidy's or somewhere on a Saturday night or trying to get into Coppers at 4:30. Maybe that's probably why it was different. It comes with age, maybe. But I just felt, I even looked at teams for Kilmacud Sevens. But you, I know this Downey, your own county man, David, they won it. I just thought, even when I looked at it, Jesus, it was a really kind of weak looking sevens. And maybe that's what the club championship's coming up there. And then, and I know they spoke at depth about the All-Ireland minor final, but it was a huge loss yesterday. And I know, like, most people probably didn't hit Intercrow Park at 5-3, 10-3. We never got to see the Jubilee teams. You had no minor final. As I said, as a Limerick person, obviously, sense of occasion was going to be there. But how many neutrals would have travelled yesterday. Like Limerick put 60,000 bums on seats there. There's very few counties who will travel, maybe the exception of Cork, that would travel with such numbers. What would have been the turnout there yesterday if Galway had to play at Kilkenny? Would you have had 65, would you have had 70,000 people there? I thought it lacked a little bit of what it is to most hurling people.
The only thing is, it's a small bit rushed at the end of the year. You have a semi-final, you've only 2 weeks. Yeah. You'll barely get in one training session, a decent training session between a semi-final and a final. Yeah. Everything is squeezed in. You know, even straight away, you have the football
it
next
week.
It
feels squeezed in. Like
It does. But look, I don't know what the right answer is. You drag it out, well, then you're going back to basic. Then you're going back to the way it was. We're dragging on another 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Even having the Camogie on next week or ladies football and then the men's football is on the week after would have been lovely because it just gives it enough time. But I'd say today everyone's going to be talking about Limerick success. Tomorrow then it's like, okay, Kerry Galway.
Yeah.
It's over very, very quickly. The whole thing, it does seem to be. But
I mean, the way that it works is you feel it, you know. I mean, September, the first Sunday in September was like a ritual of the GA community, like the minor final, the Jubilee team, there was a sense of ceremony, like that we were all taking part in something, like, and it was, you know, you knew what it was, you knew how it was going to be structured, and we're in that time, and that's what it was, and then it was moved. And now we just feed back through the likes of this or through the papers or whatever. You just feed back like, well, that felt actually a little bit rushed. And Brian Cody said as much as well. Maybe a couple of weeks. It doesn't need to go back. We're not saying go back to the 1st of September. Maybe go back a couple of weeks. Maybe the pushback against the inter-county game in favour of the club, which is like, you know, the pushback against wealthy people who are destroying, you know, capitalism destroying the world, it's all, you know, anti the elite or whatever it is. And you say, well, okay, like, let's not go so hard against the inter-county game because there's actually a lot of benefit to the inter-county game being a very strong thing. It's not all about it's not just about the club, there's also the inter-county game. And there for a while, the club was a big lament to say, like, the club needs its time, and the club certainly does need its time, but maybe it's just a couple of weeks later because it did feel. Overall, the season felt very, very rushed. Yeah. It was coming thick and fast, you know. So that's the possibility. It's not, I don't think anybody's calling for a return to September. You know, it's not an easy thing to get right. Like.
I'm sure there's going to be a review at the end of the year. It's the first year since COVID. Mm. Like last year, they only had half a stadium. So I'm sure they'll look back over and kind of go, right, where can we actually, they'll sit down at the end of the year, where can we try and find some bit of improvements? Do we have replays in semi-finals? And if there is a draw or whatever, do we push things out? A small bit, I would say everyone would love that. I'd say even just managers and players, because it is just a head wreck to it's constant game on game on game. One injury there nearly rules you out for a year. Even the Keane Lynch thing there, you know, just a hamstring injury, and next thing all of a sudden you're gone for 10 weeks. You missed a whole year basically. Mm. It's there's ways and means, but I'm sure they'll look back on it and try and drag it out a small bit, but. Mm. Just not, that's all. All this is a week or two.
Yeah, that's it. Niall, can I just say, I a lament definitely of mine, and I feel what you were saying earlier about the emotion of the experience. I don't feel like I get to go to enough games anymore. West Kerry is it's a haul to get to games in Thurles or Wexford. In some respects, what I want to see is Wexford games as well, and to go to Wexford Park is like it's like flying to New York, like, you know. So. I haven't been to as many games as I'd like to, and that leaves you feeling a little bit disconnected from things. You don't realise it because you're just disconnected. You don't realise that you are. But going to the final yesterday, and particularly there was the game itself was its own occasion, and you're digesting it and enjoying it and everything else. And then at the end, Limerick, You're a Lady is playing, and there's this kind of little bit of a sense of certainty and perfection about what they've done and how they've done it. And then Dolores comes on, and I know it's maybe well worn or whatever, but when Dolores comes on and you hear this, like, something grows in the crowd that's like a unique Limerick spirit is just infused in Croke Park, and I felt really kind of grateful to just observe it and to watch it. And what I've seen in the last couple of years down in West Kerry as well, is you've got the Limerick tourists coming down, and they're maybe fair weather fans or whatever they are, I'm not sure, but I found them at times to be a little bit obnoxious and in your face, not how I associate hurling fans to be. And I was kind of a little bit like, Limerick, I'm not sure. But yesterday it was lovely to be in amongst the hurling fans of Limerick and to feel that spirit and the feel and to see the players in the middle relaxed. It was a real, it was a real joy to just to witness you do your thing, you know.
Yeah. I suppose there probably what you had, your experience there of tourists, is probably a little bit of new money versus old money. in terms of how they conduct themselves. But I suppose the one thing, and again, you spoke about Dolores, like, you know, as Limerick people, right? Like, on Limerick's crest is Quivnic or Limnic, right? And that tended to be our battle. Like, remember Limerick, and that's going back to 1693, Patrick Sarsfield, the flight of the wild geese. All right, like, that's where history, that's who you are, that is your people. Same way as, you know what I mean, Kilkenny has its own unique heritage. And I suppose that, to me, as a Limerick person, but like, to me, as a Limerick person, as that is my county. That's my home.
Yeah.
Like, the first people, I often reference it here, the first people, both my parents are Tipperary people, the first person that was a friend of theirs in Castleconnell was legendary Mick Hickey. He was a publican here in Castleconnell. He was part of the team in 36 and 40. We were reared in our kits, performing outside, banging balls into the garage door, and he telling you that you're going to be, do you know what I mean, you're next Paddy Scanlon, or you're the next Power, next Mackey. Like, that is, to me, what you felt there yesterday, because that is our people, all right? And you can have all the processes and everything else. That is our people, and I suppose that has reawakened that in us. And it's not so long ago, all right, that, forget about even going back to the noughties where we were fighting internally and hurling ways. There was not so long ago where we had to get prominent Limerick people to have a campaign saying, I am from Limerick. We were known as Stab City. We were the butt of everybody in Dublin, the media. Yeah. Everything was Stab City.
Absolutely, man.
100 assaults in Dublin of a night. But if a lad got a knife or whatever, pulled him in Limerick, this was blown up. And we had to try and market ourselves. And like, in all the things that JP has done, he has made everyone so proud to be from Limerick. And I know it's, Jesus, I wish JP is one. Like, he just radiates the simplicity of who we are, or who, do you know what, more so even who you are, who you want to be. All right. And that's why, and again, I'm probably blue in the face. I still come back to Kilkenny. All right. And I still come back to just their sense of people. Like, I don't know what was reference made to it last night in the Sunday game, but whatever about Kilkenny saying out for the presentation, they showed the most dignified, respectful way they carried themselves in the minutes thereafter, where they stayed out in the pitch when all you wanted to do was crawl into a hole, feel sorry for yourself. And that was led by Cody. And I know I was probably, I was critical of what happened with Shefflin and blah, 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 but you still saw him yesterday. He still led his men. And it wasn't until he saw fit to kind of make his way off the pitch that Kilkenny people did it. And that's why, and I know what David spoke earlier, that Kilkenny people, they always had this sense of respect from Limerick. And again, they always felt that we were normal, honest, down-to-earth people. Maybe that's because we never had a reason to be boastful or bragging. All right, and but that's where Kilkenny, that's where we still aspire to being them. But go back to Dolores, like, she was Limerick City, all right. And as we say here, she was Limerick City kid, all right. And I suppose that just sense of people that was just, to me, on top. And I know Declan spoke about the emotion, we were just very proud to say yesterday, I'm from Limerick.
Lovely, yeah. Yeah, I spent a week there working a couple of years ago, and I felt that it was noticeable that people would be going out of their way to disarm, like, to say hello to you and to be friendly and to say, this is not, you're okay here, you know. It seemed like a concerted effort from everybody. Like, I'm sure it was just natural and native to them in some respects, but there also was maybe the knock-on from that idea of the place being dangerous to now people kind of saying, no, this is like, this place is good, you know. So it's nice to see that. It's nice from the outside to see Limerick coming back with what it's coming back with, because it's certainly, like, in music, in spoken word, rap, like, there's a lot of good stuff coming out of Limerick City at the moment. That's like, yeah, that we maybe was fashioned out of what you were talking about earlier, out of that bit of hardship and that bit of, you know, the criticisms that you were getting and what was being labelled at you in the national media for so long, kind of shapes the jewel. Like, you know, you get that bit of pressure, and what's coming out now is, yeah, we're seeing it on the hurling field as well, I suppose.
Yeah, they conduct themselves brilliantly. But that's led straight from the manager all the way down. I love the way, again, last night, that Carolyn Curd was up on stage there. Love the way, like, that John Kelly would be pushing someone else up there just to try and take the limelight off himself. That's the kind of person that he just seems to be.
Yeah.
You know, and Declan Hannon as well. Again, Jesus, what an achievement, four times to captain an All-Ireland team.
My God, what a...
like, he's turned into the Stephen Cluckson there of...
Oh, he's just ridiculous.
The way he conducts himself. Jesus, he's a gent of a man to ever meet off the field as
gent.
Well.
Yeah.
I found even... just even out afterwards, I stayed on for an hour in Croke Park just to enjoy, I suppose, the occasion that it's there. You don't want to go home, like. But the players all stayed out in the pitch and they just sat down there and they just had a chat. Like, normally, back in the day, you get back into the dressing room and everyone's going absolutely nuts, you know, and the milk is going, the Lucozade is going, everyone's just singing and dancing. But the lads just sat down, they just... They soaked it all in. They didn't get carried away. They just seemed like they're... That's the scary thing about it, like, is that this is nearly routine now. They're going to go home and they'll enjoy themselves. They seem like lads that'll enjoy themselves, and then they'll have their winter and then they'll come back. And John Kiely said, we'll be ready to go again in January. So that one, because it's a scary enough thought to see them coming back again, especially the young lads coming on off the bench then as well. And
It's a scary thought to see a team wear their success lightly. You'd almost be hoping when they do that they do lose, they do go straight in and lose the rag, because in the losing the rag, there's an opportunity for other people, other teams to come in. Whereas when you wear your successes lightly, you can also wear your failures lightly, and you're always kind of, which is what Kilkenny have maintained for a long time, you just maintain that. Yeah, a better line than, we'll say, like a Wexford and up, and a 25-year cycle of up and down. Like, and
there's a fair grounding in those lads. You just know by them, the way that they conduct themselves, just sitting out on the pitch, enjoying life, just enjoying, taking in the whole moment. You just know that they're, it's in those kind of moments that you try and savour and remember and then want to get back to again.
But David, just even in terms of Declan there, lads, and again, I know like he's the most... Sure, he's one of the most recognisable figures of that number team. Like, I was fortunate enough that I came across Declan as a kid, and okay, and obviously you'd want to be a fool not to recognise his talent, but he's just so ordinary. People ask you, Declan is Declan, and he's always been Declan. He has never ever changed. He is like Tuesday there, they go back to Adair. You could find Declan slipping away there for a pint and watch the racing in Plumpton for the day with a newspaper in front of him. And he'd tell you himself, that's where he would probably be at his best. I see it here with the boys we have in the club, Dan and Tom. And actually, a very quick aside, they were joined by a third hand player on the extended panel this year. He'd made the panel for a number of the games, including the Must Find, but Kieran Barry. There was a guy you spoke about earlier, David. You spoke about lads in their 20s aspiring to something. This was a guy who played 21s maybe 3-4 years ago, probably in his final game. They're beating McCork at a rough night off Shane Barrett. This guy, during lockdown, lads, he came back from it. He came back from it transformed. I remember talking to him after training one evening, and I said to him, you're looking to make the Limerick panel. And he said it to me, yeah, he says, I am. And if he'd said that to any of his buddies or anybody in the club, they'd probably nearly have, Jesus, Kieran, you're hallucinating, man. Are you that arrogant to think you make it? But this guy, as in, again, like that, just the dirt of work that he did to get to a position where he was part of an All-Ireland final, like, that is the role models that these guys are. And it is as simple as they say it, and as much and all as you'd love to come up with some crazy formula, they are so ordinary off the pitch. On the pitch, they're extraordinary, but just work, work, work. And the influence that that is having on guys wanting to be part of that unique kind of, that unique synergy. Like, as I said, the proof's in the pudding probably for some of the guys who didn't even make the panel yesterday, to say, like Mike Hoolan and Oisin O'Reilly, two guys from Kilmarnock, the very same, who've gone to extraordinary lengths to develop themselves in their mid-20s. That is possibly the immediate legacy of what Limerick have achieved.
Yeah, yeah. Look, we could talk for, I'd talk for another couple of hours on this, to be honest. It's easy going. There's so much in what I think both Limerick and what Kilkenny have represented as well, and the teams you're part of, Dave. But just, I think Brian Cody's contribution overall anyway, like, you know, Limerick still had to grind out their win, and they were always going to meet an honest effort, whatever else. And the problem now is Brian was talking about it for the last 20 years when the spirit is right. And unfortunately now the spirit is right, but the spirit's right in Limerick. It's right in Kilkenny still as well, but the better players at the moment, it just seems to be that they've hit their golden patch, but the spirit is right. Yeah. And it's clear for all to see. And then when that happens, like, that's, you can kind of accept it a little bit and say, well, look, they're playing the game in an honest way. And when you said that, Niall, it definitely triggered something in me. You know, you're talking about not being the decorated player, or not having the All-Irelands or whatever, All-Stars. I don't know what the decorated player is to you, but I think to be decorated is to have played the game well and to play the game strongly and manly and honestly. And Jesus, there's not too many who played it more so that way than you. That's all we've time for. Niall, thanks very much. Enjoy the Gaelic grounds, if you're going.
Train driver, he might stop on the way down to West Kerry. He tell him to pull in there in Limerick there for a couple of hours there, Gizzy. We'll find some form of a bed for you. Maybe we'll get you a few jobs.
I think the 3 o'clock train goes to Limerick Junction, and I know there's a 7 o'clock train leaving Limerick Junction. So who knows? Dave, thanks very much for coming up from Kilkenny. I know it's a tougher morning, and there's plenty of fruit to be picked down at home, but it's great to be in studio with you and to be chatting about the game. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Dave.
That's all we've got time for. We'll be back next week to look over the whole season, to see where everything lies after Limerick's incredible win yesterday, of which it was a pleasure to be part of, pleasure to be there as well. And one of the things that I had missed at the games, or having not been to the games, was yesterday afterwards I got to chat to a load of people who came up and were talking about the podcast and saying that they were listening, and James Ryle is this and Niall Moran is that, and but it was a lovely interaction and a lovely feedback, and it was great to meet the people who listen, and I got a sense of gratitude for the people who do listen and who pick things apart because they're listening really intently, and it was lovely to be there in amongst all the lads and to get that. So that was a real joy of the game yesterday too. So we'll catch you next week. Thanks very much.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Donald O'Donovan is the left cornerback. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well. And that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now.